Hey, tourpreneurs, it's Mitch Bach, and just a quick note before we begin today's episode. Tourpreneur is currently sponsored by Google. We're thankful for their support of our community, and we are offering with them a completely free course helping you unlock the power and potential of Google's Things to Do program, which is specifically helping tour operators add their tours to Google in new ways that gives you new exposure and more direct bookings. To learn more, go to tourpreneur.com/Google. And as always, show notes, more resources, links to our newsletter, our business coaching community, and so much more are available on tourpreneur.com. Now to the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tourpreneur. I'm Mitch Bach, and I cannot wait to talk to my guest today, Brian Jewell of the Group Travel Leader. Brian is someone who has kind of that omniscient understanding of every aspect of the group travel industry, and it's because he's the vice president and executive editor of a whole series of different publications centered around group travel. And so I love talking to these kinds of guests because they have their finger on the pulse of what's going on in the group travel industry. And I'm excited to dive into that topic and much more with Brian. Brian, welcome to Tourpreneur.
Yeah, Mitch, I am thrilled to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So I gave kind of a bird's eye view of who is the man, the myth, the legend, Brian Jewell, but could you fill in the gaps and just tell us a little bit about the group travel leader and yourself?
Yeah, well, just to set the record straight, I'm not omniscient. I'm just getting old. So with that comes a lot of experience. But the Group Travel Leader, we started in the early 90s as a print publication company. We actually started as a newspaper, if you can believe that, a newspaper for the group tour industry here in the U.S., and that is primarily multi-day outbound tours. Over the years, of course, we evolved, we grew, we switched to more of a magazine format. We have a completely digital ecosystem as well. But the Group Travel Leader is still read by about 30,000 travel planners in the U.S. who are passionate about taking people mostly from their communities on group travel experiences together. So they range from local travel agents and outbound tour companies that are, you know, running for-profit businesses, as well to many, many people who would do it on a volunteer basis for a community organization, a senior center, or they just have 100 friends who love to come on trips with them. So in that diverse community, there are people who are planning for affinity organizations. So like the college I went to will take 3 or 4 alumni trips a year. And the person that plans those trips reads one of our magazines called Select Traveler. We also have a magazine that's read by the sort of faith-based travel community called Going on Faith, which is actually a really vibrant travel community in its own. So we're doing 3 different tourism-focused magazines, websites, e-newsletters. I host a podcast, do a lot of speaking. We're at all kinds of events. So we're busy and we're wearing the legacy media hat and the new media hat and having a great time with some of the greatest people in the world who are the tourism community.
Wow. The 1990s, a newspaper. How were they finding you? Who was subscribing? How was it getting delivered? I have so many newspaper delivery questions around that.
Yeah. So our founder had a friend in tourism who ran a tour company. It was, you know, one of these legacy tour companies from a long time ago. And he had amassed a list of thousands and thousands of leads, customers, potential customers around the country, people who were interested in group travel. And so his name was Charlie. Charlie decided that he wanted to do other things besides run this legacy tour company. Our founder, Mac, had been working in tourism marketing for the state of Kentucky, decided he wanted to get out of the bureaucracy of working for the state government. So Charlie said, I've got the audience. Mac said, I know how to do publishing. And they joined forces and hit the road. And it's been a whirlwind. I came on in about 2003. So I've been here for about 2/3 of it now, which is just insane for me to think of. But yeah, it's been great.
So you and I actually sort of got our start then around the same time. And I'm interested in your perspective. We've both been working in group travel for a long, long time. Can you define what we mean by group travel, like what that encompasses? You had mentioned affinity groups. You had mentioned kind of big tour operators, you know, who are these people? It seems like a really diverse bunch.
It is super diverse. And we can start by, you know, just the very basic definition, which includes the largest umbrella of people, and then drill down to some of the specific niches. Group travel is anytime people go somewhere together. So anything more than a family. So you might go with your significant other on vacation. You might take your kids to a week at a condo in Florida, whatever. But if you took 7, 8, 10 other people with you, you start to cross the threshold into group travel. I kind of think about it as anything that would be difficult to book through your garden variety OTA. If it's difficult to book those hotel rooms, you can only book so many rooms on Expedia.
Yeah, usually it maxes out at 10 rooms or 7 rooms.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So a situation where you really need to be talking to a salesperson at that hotel. There might be a contract involved. There are room blocks and rooming lists involved. That's where we kind of cross over from, you know, just some friends doing something casually into something that requires some more logistics and organization. So it certainly encompasses the ecosystem of the tour operators, multi-day tour operators. When we talk about group travel here, we're really focused on the community aspect of it. I would say 90% of our readers are doing a lot of preformed groups. That might not be the only thing they do, but they are working with organizations either that are formal organizations or just groups of friends that already know each other and want to travel together because they are already sold on the benefit of community travel experiences. You know, so not just doing that cool thing with your significant other or your kids, but doing it with 10, 20, 30 other people who are already part of your community and just the incredible richness that that can bring. So a lot of our readers are people who just love to travel and, you know, they share pictures of their own trips and stuff. And they had friends say, hey, next time you go to Alaska, could I come with you? And next thing they knew, they had a dozen friends coming with them to Alaska or Sedona or, you know, the Galapagos or whatever. And it kind of organically grew, as many travel businesses do, organically grew into this thing where all of a sudden they've got dozens or hundreds of people who are saying, I want you to plan my next vacation because you're a great planner. I don't want to plan it. And I want to come with you. And many of these people are actually on every tour because they are part of the experience. You know, they're sort of a Pied Piper. They're a friend. They're a security blanket for folks who maybe don't have the travel experience, but they know, oh, Mitch has been on a bunch of trips and he's fun to be with. I can trust him with my money. I can trust him with my experience, and I can trust that he's going to show me a good time. And I'm going to make some new friends along the way. And that's really exciting.
So what a strange and unique and interesting sort of niche, people who are tour operators without being tour operators. You say they kind of conceive of themselves as planners. Do they have a name for themselves, or is it a lot in a lot of ways, are they just sort of doing what evolved organically and making it work the way they make it work? Or are they partnering with an operator? Like, how are they seeing what they're doing?
Yeah, you know, it is all of the above. And one of the things that drove me nuts for my first, honestly, decade in this business is how ambiguous the names are, because you can ask 10 different professionals and they'll give you 10 different answers. So some of these people call themselves travel agents, but and some of them are legitimate travel agents who this is their full-time job and they book some groups in addition to booking honeymoons and, you know, weddings and all those other cruises and things that travel agents do. Some of them just realize, if I want to take my people on some trips that involve flights, it'll go a lot better for me if I have an IATA number and can book those flights directly. And, you know, back in the day, they could get commission on them. That's not so much of a thing anymore, but still they can control the bookings. Like they just realized, you know, in flights and cruises and stuff, there's some benefit to having a credential that says I'm a travel agent. So they'll call themselves travel agents. Some of them call themselves tour operators, but they are in that group that only really wants to pay their bills with their tour company. They want to go on every trip themselves, and their tour company is a method of funding that trip and having some fun with friends. And, you know, whatever's left over might be beer money, but they're not out there trying to scale and grow and, you know, launch something and then sell it in any of that. And then many of them just call themselves group leaders because travel is a part or a portion of what they do. Maybe they have a responsibility with a community organization. You know, they're director of community relations. And so they're out there in their communities, you know, signing up volunteers for things, raising money. Some of them are nonprofits, some of them are for-profits. But 3 or 4 times a year, that responsibility involves taking a bunch of people on a trip. And so I really love that we can help those people, especially because they don't have the bandwidth to become a tourism professional, but it's really important for their trips to be successful. And so we love coming alongside them and giving them the destination intelligence and the how-tos and the tips and tricks and referring to them to professionals and organizations that are going to take the burden of running a tour off of them and allow them just to have great experiences with their constituents.
Yeah, I think, you know, I remember back in my days as a tour manager, there were these adult companies like Globus or Colette, and once in a blue moon, sometimes you'd get hired as a tour manager through these companies, but it was actually a preformed group. Mm-hmm. That preformed group had booked with that tour operator to handle all the operationality of it, but that leader, for lack of a better word, or maybe that is the right word, the group leader was the one that was actually doing the sales. And in exchange, sometimes they were getting a commission check and they were always traveling for free. And it allowed them to kind of support their hobby. That didn't cost them anything. They might have made a little, you know, a little money or a little stipend or got some travel perks. But then the operator did the bulk of the operational, you know, legwork to make sure that the tour was successful and insurance and flights and all of that stuff.
Yep.
I bring that up because I'm wondering what your perspective is on my constituency, which are small to medium multi-day tour operators.
Yeah.
Is there an opportunity there in your audience to figure out how the certain small and medium tour operators can solve the difficulties of these travel planners or these group leaders and work together and partner together? Or is it really the case in which this kind of group of individual is understanding or growing in consciousness or awareness that they are essentially a tour operator and they need to professionalize? Or is it both?
It is totally both. And it's going to depend on a number of factors. One of them is where my audience is wanting to go on a particular trip. So I live in Lexington, Kentucky. If somebody in my community who's in my audience is going to do a trip to, let's say, Washington, D.C., Colonial Williamsburg, it's an 8-hour drive from us. It's not that big a deal. So they're probably going to do a lot of the legwork themselves. Now, D.C. might be a bad example because that city is difficult to navigate and there are lots of on-the-ground operators in D.C. that could help. But you see what I mean? Like if it's not a heavy lift to get there, spend 2 or 3 days, our readers are comfortable booking their own transportation, you know, making hotel arrangements. They might hire a local step-on guide, which that's another interesting nomenclature. A lot of people that in your audience might call themselves day tour operators or day experience operators, in the legacy tourism industry, we call them step-on guides. It's the same thing. But there's so much siloing between the two sides that people may not realize that there are opportunities for cross-pollination. So certainly your community that do those day trips, there are tons of opportunities to connect with the group travel planner and say, hey, when you get to Williamsburg or DC or Columbus, Ohio or Nashville or whatever, we can take care of every experience on the ground. So you don't have to call 8 museums and get admission and figure out where you're going to have lunch and then figure out where the bus is supposed to park. Like, there's a huge opportunity to take some of that legwork off the plate of our travel planners. If it's a short trip, though, they're probably going to do their own hotel and their own transportation. If it's a longer trip, if it's a more exotic destination or a place that is in high demand or just feels intimidating, New York to everybody who's not from New York feels intimidating. Europe to 90% of our readers is going to feel intimidating. Exotics like Jordan, Egypt, South America, Antarctica, anything like that. 9 times out of 10, they are looking for a partner to host that trip. And they really just want to be the friendly face with their community that goes on that tour. But they want experts to plan it, run it, administer it, take care of the payments, take care of the rooming lists, all that stuff. And so that's a huge opportunity for your inbound multi-day tour operators to say, hey, there are people that need my services. They need my help. But here's the secret. They're never coming on Viator to find you. They're never coming on these digital channels that you work with to find you. They tend to work with people they know, because group tourism, and especially the legacy group tour industry, is hugely relational, massively relational. And that means something that some of your millennial audience may struggle with. That means in-person events. That means shaking hands and going out to have drinks, having lunch, having dinner together, sitting down for business appointments. It's a new world for people that have never had to do that and have just figured out digital marketing. But if you show up to one of the half dozen great tourism events in the group tour space, meet some of these tour operators and say, hey, I've got great multi-day tours in wine country, Jeep tours in the desert, whatever you do, they're going to be thrilled to meet you, but they want to meet you before they trust you with their community's time and money.
God, I cannot thank you enough for saying that, because we say it all the time, but it's always good when it doesn't come from a parent. I think it's also hard because everything is fractured. I mean, my word, in the last 3 minutes of you talking, you went from inbound or outbound multi-day to inbound multi-day to receptives to day tour operator, all of these different words. And then we talk about all these different kinds of events. And you're right, probably the number one question on the minds of our listeners was, how do I access this audience of people that have this need? So talk to me more about events, about what you're doing there and how you, as this kind of operator, are functioning.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are two really big sort of associations in the group tourism space here in the U.S. Now, outside the U.S., I don't have as much expertise, so I'm afraid I can only really speak to the domestic market here in the States. One is called the American Bus Association. The other is called National Tour Association, or NTA. They've both been around for decades and decades, and they comprise legacy tour companies, professional tour companies, motor coach companies that offer tours as part of what they do. And when they hold a big convention, they're going to have anywhere between, 700 or 800 to 2,000 or 3,000 people there on site from the tour companies, as well as from DMOs. And that's a really important part of our ecosystem, because the Lexington Convention and Visitors Bureau, NYC and Company, the Kentucky Department of Tourism, they all recognize the value of that multi-day inbound tour guest. They recognize the economic impact of it. And so they're going to these conventions, they're displaying, they're exhibiting, they're sponsoring. And most of these tourism events also have structured business appointments where you are actually matched with potential business opportunities in advance, and you spend significant portions of the conference not just wandering an exhibit hall, but you're actually seated at a booth, and you've got 6-minute or 7-minute or 8-minute appointments with people from destinations or other vendors who could really help move your company forward. And that's where those relationships are formed. A 6-minute appointment, if you've never done it before, it can feel a little intimidating. It's kind of a speed dating situation. You walk out of there and you say, well, I made 100 new friends in 3 days, and I'm tapped, I'm exhausted. But of course, it's not just that. So you have the appointment with the person, and then you run into them at the cocktail party. And then if you're vibing, you may go to dinner. And then a lot of times we love to party. So there's no party like a tourism event party. I mean, I've been on the field at the Cowboy Stadium in Dallas, with 2,000 friends eating hors d'oeuvres and having cocktails. And it was incredible. And that's just a normal night at a tourism convention. And that's where the relationships really get cemented. That's where you get to know people. And many, many times you become friends with people before you start doing business with people. So those are the big ones. And then there are smaller ones focused on smaller niches. So there's an event specifically for the student and youth travel market, which is a very important part of what we do. There are events specifically aimed at the affinity groups, aimed at the church groups, aimed at different age groups. So you can spend as much or as little time as you want going to the legacy group travel events and meeting tour company owners, travel agents, and bus companies. And there are companies that have built very, very nice businesses just on that. And so you don't have to be a slave to the OTA, to the marketing, to our digital overlords who tell us how to do business. If you're willing, to exercise those personal skills and get out and try some of these events.
Yeah, it's so right. The digital services want you to remain digital and think digital is the solution to everything. Mm-hmm. They don't want to encourage you to get out the door and make these types of totally human connections that are off the books and are sealed with handshakes. It's funny, Alexis de Tocqueville, 200 years ago, when he toured, the Frenchman who toured America, said there are so many associations. And so even 200 years ago, even 200 years ago, people just were getting together in America, but also around the world. I think your point of find your niche, or at least hopefully have a niche, find your audience, find out where they hang out, and then go meet them. I know a tourpreneur partner, Peter, who, when Airbnb and short-term rentals came to his region of Scotland, he went door to door. He figured out how or where those were, and he went and talked to them, developed relationships with the Airbnb hosts or the VRB hosts when those started going. And those types of relationships, you're right, when they're cemented by usually a decent amount of alcohol and food and an experience together, are just a different quality of relationship. And that goes whatever country you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it actually saved a lot of people's bacon during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Because, I can't tell you how many stories I heard of people whose relationships helped them take care of a group that was literally on the road and stuck on the road when the quarantine orders came down. And they were able to say, I've got a group out three states away. Who among my friends can help them, you know, find a place to stay, help get them home, help them navigate, you know, the rules and regulations? We saw people coming together to help keep each other's businesses open, help, you know, say who needs to sell some motor coaches, who needs to, work on help getting a grant together. It was incredibly powerful. And I think if you are just playing the digital game and only the digital game, you're at a disadvantage, especially in a time of crisis.
So we have a digital inflection point that we're all kind of enduring right now. Some of it's very exciting, don't get me wrong. Obviously, it's a really interesting time to be kind of in our space because of the connectivity that the sort of digital landscape offers. You also see things like self-driving vehicles and a lot of digitally enabled ways for you, the traveler, to have a completely tailor-made, personalized, solitary experience with you and your boyfriend or your girlfriend in your little Waymo car, delivering you commentary along the way, taking care of your dinner reservation, and you've already booked all of your hotels and spent 9 million hours before the trip going through every Google web page and blog post and using ChatGPT to plan to a fine-tooth comb the meals, the hotels, the transportation mechanisms that you, the individual, want. Mm-hmm. And yet, you and I both work, you have it in your name, in the group travel industry. And so I kind of want to get a little philosophical here in our second half and just ask you, is there a space for group travel moving forward, or is it essentially a cumbersome problem that is being solved by these new individualized solutions?
Yeah, well, let me address that first from a very practical point of view and then from the more philosophical point of view. Practically, after hearing you describe all those things that somebody can do to prepare for a trip, I feel like I need a nap.
That's good.
Because it is exhausting. And there's a part of anticipation, you know, in doing all those things that makes you excited about the trip. I get that. But one of the huge benefits of group travel is you don't have to do that. If you have a high level of trust in the person that's going to be planning it for you, you don't have to spend your time on the transportation, figuring out where you're going to stay, where the best places to eat are, what time you should show up at the Vatican, or, you know, whatever, you know, how long you're going to be in line at the Louvre. You don't have to worry about that because somebody who knows all those things, and ideally somebody who knows your psychographic, has already planned them for you, not just in a way that's going to be convenient, but it's going to be delighting. And, you know, my experiences in trying to plan an ex- plan a travel experience that delights me myself, I don't have a great track record with that. I really don't. I come back saying, well, man, we should have taken the later flight because this 6 a.m. nonsense was stupid. Why? I need to fire my travel agent for this one. That travel professional can do that for you better. And that's an argument for a travel agent or for a tour company. But what's great about a tour company is it's going to introduce an element of community that you're not going to get on your own. There is a crisis of community in modern life. We certainly see it here in the U.S. It's not just in the U.S., but people are lonely. Millennials, Gen X, are reporting incredible rates of loneliness, and that dovetails with mental health problems, clinical depression. It's a bad deal. And a group travel experience forces you into community. That, number one, just makes the trip more fun. Everything is more fun when you get to do it with more people. But more than that, it creates this whole other layer to the value proposition, which is that you get to be with people, either A, who are great friends who are going to just, you know, blow the value of the trip out for you, or B, people who you don't know yet who are going to enrich you. They're different than you. They may think differently, vote differently, worship differently. They may be on the other side of the red-blue divide or all the other schisms in our culture, and yet you get to spend time with them anyway, and it makes you a more enlightened and a better person. And it's so hard to put a value on that, but I hear stories all the time of people, millennials and Gen Z people, coming home from group trip experiences and saying, I've got a new best friend. And they make friendships so powerful that they book again on another group trip to another destination, and they book together because the community building power of group travel is that important. And for many, many people, it's worth trading some autonomy to have that community. It's worth trading, you know, having something absolutely tailored to you in order to have that experience that exposes you to other kinds of people, other ways of thinking, and just makes you a better citizen of the world.
Beautifully said, and so many important points to dissect there, and I want to dissect them all because this is such an important topic. On one level, the audience might be hearing that and going, well, yeah, I work in this industry. That's what I do. That's what we do. And yet locked or sort of hidden within what you just said is actually a business blueprint that's very different than kind of what has been in the past. It's part of it is marketing. I get fed Facebook ads daily by group travel companies who think I'm one of their customers and not just analyzing them. Yeah. But I noticed, for example, recently Contiki started calling what they do not group travel, but social travel. Mm. And I think that is such a beautiful term, actually, such a great rebranding, because it begins to hint at what we're doing as the cure for loneliness and the antidote to the hyper-individualized focus on us satisfying what we define as exactly our needs. And that kind of zero-sum self-satisfaction is just really empty ultimately. And I see this all the time. And I mean, I live in New York City and I look at people in Michelin star restaurants just like bored at their meal. And it's because they spent 9 months getting the reservation and analyzing what they're going to have and reading every single person's review of the chicken liver annual latte. And then they get there and it lives up to what they expected, which was that it would be really, 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 really good. But it's not that like emotion of delight. And kind of what you're saying is that in a sense, there needs to be a refocusing of what we're selling to our customers on like a marketing level. Yeah. We're the cure for loneliness. We're the opportunity for human delight and community that we're all dying to have, whether we know it or not, because we've just spent years locked in kind of these digital horrorscapes that have been really like self-referential. And this is something different. Pop out of it. Come meet your new best friends and let us surprise you for 10 days.
The surprise thing is so powerful. because you're right. We have all the information. I mean, all of it. And if, you know, don't get me wrong, if you've always wanted to go to, you know, the restaurant that you saw on the Netflix chef show, I mean, by all means, do that. But I had an experience, this had to have been like 15 years ago now. I was in a city that I was not all that impressed with, so I won't name it. But one place they took me was this little kind of mom and pop sandwich shop that was known for this one kind of sandwich that I'd never had before.
Which part of Orlando was that in?
Oh man. No, it wasn't Florida. And
Sorry, Orlando. Love you all.
The mouse is going to come after you now.
Oh, I'll get comments.
So my local host took me to the sandwich shop, and this woman came out and explained how her dad created this version of their signature sandwich and how people came from far and wide to try the sandwich, and how Elvis had eaten the sandwich, and how presidents had this sandwich flown to the White House or whatever. She told her whole story. She was absolutely charming. And I listened, and I was hungry, and I don't listen well when I'm hungry, but she was so compelling. I listened to her, and then she brought out these sandwiches, and I ate until I was like uncomfortably full. Like I overdid it because I was blown away. And you are not going to find that place on TripAdvisor. You're not. It's in a destination that you will never think to go to, I guarantee you, unless you are with a great, insightful tour operator that knows that you need to go to this destination, knows you need to go eat the sandwich, and knows you need to meet this woman and hear the story of how this sandwich, and particularly like the one condiment they put on it that takes it to the next level, how that sandwich changed her dad's life and her family's life, and is changing her community. That's going to blow your mind, but you'll never find it on TripAdvisor, and you're never going to get there through Googling, you know, best sandwiches in America.
Yeah. It's funny. When I started my walking tour business in New York City, I looked around and I just saw so much marketing, like websites and all these different tours. And it was overwhelming to me, just even as a consumer, like assessing my competition and how I was going to fit into the market. And what I ended up creating, this was 12 years ago during the speakeasy craze in New York City. And I created basically like a speakeasy tour company where there was no website, zero website. It was just a phone number on an embossed card. And I would give that card out to my guests at the end of the tour. And I'd say, if this delighted you, if you think this is an amazing thing, I do not want you to review it, good or bad. I don't want you to name me anywhere. I just want you to give this card to somebody that you think would be a great person to take the tour, and nothing more. And that was my marketing. And these cards got passed and passed and passed, and the phone number got shared and shared and shared. And what you had to do to book me was text me or give me a phone call. And if I answered, you got me, and I'd slot you in. But it was just that element of what am I getting myself into? Not reading the like two paragraphs on how I'm going to like wow you and all the things that we're going to see. It was just that kind of sense of trust me on this, and that word of mouth marketing, again, tantalizing or touching the emotions that we all want to feel more than ever now. We want to feel connected to a sandwich. And knowing that what you ate is the best isn't connecting you to it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like giving you clout or bragging rights. And there's an emptiness. There's just a hollowness to that as the end result of what you want your tour experience to be.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I could go to Gordon Ramsay's restaurant. I'm sure it would be great. But also, how many does he have now? You know, 45? And they're all the same, and a million other people have been there, and, you know, kind of, so what?
Yeah, so, you know, there's partially a lesson for, I think, both of our audiences, which is that this sense of understanding that humans are looking for something more and something different than actually what most of their behavior indicates should change how you go about planning your trips or operating your trips. That whether you call yourself an agent or a planner or an operator or whatever it is, asking yourself, how can I get in touch with those core emotions that I want my guests to feel along the entire experience, and asking myself, can I create a moment of surprise or delight that isn't just an itinerary item, and even withhold it from the itinerary, make it that revelation.
Yeah. I have a wonderful example of that. I was in Cuba, I want to say in like 2010, 2011, it was during the Obama administration when you could go to Cuba for a while, and then, you know, they keep going back and forth, but this is, you could go to Cuba for a while. And I went with a tour company, and there was a group kind of with me on that tour. They were from Tempe, Arizona. And one of the places we were supposed to like meet this woman who was a conductor of, you know, classical music. And she ended up having like a little chamber orchestra with her, but we were in the basement of like a communist era school building somewhere in Havana, you know, fluorescent lights buzzing, literally concrete floors. I mean, just everything you think it was going to be. And she tells us a little bit about what she does, and, you know, it's all great. And then she says, can we play some music for you? And we say, yeah, sure. And she raises her baton, and with the first stroke comes maybe the most beautiful sound I've ever heard. I mean, ever heard. And I've been around a lot of music, a lot of classical music. It was perhaps the most well-rehearsed chamber orchestra I've ever heard. They're using borrowed instruments that they've repaired for 30 years now. I mean, they don't have any of the stuff we do. It's not a great sounding room, but they just blew us away and connected on such an emotional level that Arizona group I was with booked them to come perform at the Art Center in Tempe and jumped through all the hoops with visas and travel restrictions. And they brought them back like 2 or 3 years in a row because it was such an emotional connection. And I don't think it changed anybody's opinion about Cuba or communism, or, you know, Castro or travel restrictions or anything like that. But it created this incredible moment of humanity that nobody in that room is ever going to forget. And it crossed some barriers that, you know, legally, politically would have been very difficult to cross.
I think that's the root opportunity and joy that we get as these types of experience creators. It's to be able to tap into humans at their most human and fundamental, and not at that other surface level of what you identify as politically or social strata or whatever. You know, you're on a bus together and somebody might be worth $30 million and only eat at the best restaurants, and somebody might actually have saved up for the last 10 years in order to take this group trip. You're all in the same bus together, and you're all going to basically have the same dinners together. You're going to eat in the same hotel. So there's like a leveling that happens. And then that leveling is an opportunity and that kind of egality to just be humans without labels.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that's super beautiful about the community that we're plugged into is it's very, very diverse. Group travel, many people may not know this, group travel is incredibly popular, especially in the African-American community. A lot of Black family reunions are travel experiences. So it's not just, you know, we're all going to grandma's house for the weekend, but it's, we're all going to Orlando. Let's give Orlando some love. We're all going to Orlando. Or we're all going to New Orleans.
Be realistic in your examples, Brian.
we're all going to New Orleans. That's a very realistic example. And they'll end up with 200 or 300 people. Like, they got to charter several motor coaches, and they'll sell out a hotel. It's not just big groups, but it's very diverse. We see lots of you know, multiracial groups out on the road together. We see lots of multiracial friendships starting. There's, you know, obviously plenty of, you know, different sexual orientations and stuff, all getting into these great experiences together. You know, Jews, Catholics, atheists, evangelicals, I mean, you name it. It's just everybody's thrown in there together. And it's I've been on some group trips where I'm like, the diversity I see right now, the fun and the love and inclusion that I see right now, is this is the target that so many people in America are trying to get us to on a macro level. And this is it on a micro level. And we in tourism can't get the country there on the macro level, but we can create those micro experiences day in and day out and hopefully move the needle in that direction of unity and joy and diversity rather than always being at each other's throats.
It's it's built into the state of mind that your guests are in when they come to you. So why not make that part of your mission of what you're doing as a business?
Yeah, yeah. And a similar thought, you know, based on what you just said about make that part of your mission. We have more and more talks about sustainability in tourism now than I've ever heard before, which of course is great. Most of them don't amount to anything, if I may be blunt. And sometimes I think we're asking the wrong question, because we are decades away from, you know, truly emission-free motor coaches, airplanes, whatever, if they ever happen. So, you know, instead of saying, well, what can I do around the margins to make my trip marginally more sustainable? Maybe it's, given the fact that there is going to be some, you know, environmental impact from what we do, how do we make sure that the pro-social benefit of this trip is so powerful that it makes the environmental impact worthwhile? You know, like, there's going to be some carbon emissions, so let's make sure we're really impacting the communities we visit. Let's make sure the people who are coming with us are really having a transformational experience, so that, you know, it's not just, well, I spent 7 days at the beach, you know?
Transformational emissions. No, you're right. In other words, it's a non-negotiable now. I mean, for it's good business, and it's also what we in this industry should be doing, is creating transformational businesses and understanding that your ethical obligation is more than just getting rid of plastic water bottles or making these kind of tokenistic gestures. Nothing wrong with them. I'm not penalizing people for thinking on that level about sustainability, but I do like, for example, the United Nations Sustainability Development Goals, the SDGs. What's brilliant about them is they really look at everything that we're doing, how we're doing it on just community building level, on educational level, on diversity level and equity level, as you had talked about, and gives you kind of almost a more holistic blueprint for evaluating your business across all of those different dimensions, all of which go into being a force for good out there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
When you look back at your organization starting in the 90s and you started in the 2000s, can you chart kind of just a personal course of where you've seen our industry evolve or change over the years?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and again, my perspective comes from sort of the legacy side.
You're forgiven.
When I first started, it was still the World War II generation traveling. And the norms and conventions that defined the way we do group travel were things that were created in the 50s and 60s and 70s to serve that World War II generation. If you think about where that generation came from, the world they grew up in, many of them were single-income families. Travel wasn't nearly accessible the way it is now. So a lot of people had just never really traveled. Very, very many women never got the chance to travel. So maybe their husbands traveled on business. The women didn't have any chances to. Then the husbands died because men of that generation tended to die before women of that generation. And so we had a lot of widows who wanted to travel, felt unsafe and unsure and had no idea how to do it. And group tour operators provided that safety and security, which was wonderful. But as a result, the norms and conventions and habits were tailored to the tastes of World War II generation widows. And it took quite a long time for our industry to transition from the World War II generation widow to the baby boomer. We spent 10 years writing about it, covering it in our magazines, because it wasn't easy. And we lived through, you know, all the naysayers who were saying, when those people die, group travel is done. You know, and I've been around long enough to go through two or three cycles of that. You know, and now
so many pronouncements.
I mean,
again,
it's just,
right now, yeah, self-driving vehicles. Why do you need a bus? Why do you need group travel anymore with the internet? Blah blah blah.
The internet was going to kill it. COVID was going to kill it. Millennials were going to kill it. Well, surprise of surprises, millennials love group travel. They love it, and so there was a giant shift from the paradigm that came from the inception of group travel, from that World War II generation, to the baby boomer generation. The boomers said, we're willing to spend money, because, you know, their parents were frugal, grew up in the Depression, you know, so they were looking for a lot of value. Boomer generation said, we're not as concerned about the price point. You just better make it awesome, right? And we'll pay for awesome. That means better hotels, better restaurants, good wine, you know, all that sort of thing. Now, COVID changed the world, supply chain changed the world. You know, we're still working through all that stuff. But now you've got millennials coming along and saying, those nice things are great. It'll be fun to enjoy a little bit of it, but I really want impact. I want to feel changed and I want to feel like I made an impact. And so that's the direction that we're going. That's the direction that I think your audience has their finger on the pulse of just intrinsically. And then there's those of us in Gen X who are just working and we're like, one day we'll get to travel.
Yeah. What happened to our generation? I'm Gen X. I'm a cusp. I'm like right. Like by some definitions, I'm a millennial and some definitions I'm Gen X, but yeah, I grew up riding bikes until it got dark out and then coming back home. And yet I know how to use Snapchat and TikTok and enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, but it, I mean, it's been a sea change, and the challenge for legacy operators has been to keep up with those changes in generation, because, you know, once you get a business going, it's processes, right? It's processes and being able to repeat things over and over, and you don't have time to stop and think like, what does a person want today that same age person didn't want 10 years ago? Yeah. The challenge for the digital based tour operator is recognizing that the legacy market had some great ideas and could have a lot to share with them if they're willing to tap into that and help them solve the people problems, help make it relatable, help them build those community impact experiences and those friendships, and not just be about numbers and analytics.
Yeah, I did a webinar with the National Tour Association a few months ago, and one of the panelists was a woman who for, I think, over 40 years has been doing women-only travel. And now you can't open a travel trade magazine without talking about this new fad, but it wasn't a fad. It was often there were these incisive, innovative, creative individuals out at the forefront that birthed these genres that get quote unquote discovered decades later because everybody's doing them, but they're out there. And those individuals, I mean, they had to chart paths, you know. We kind of stand on the shoulder of the people who charted these paths. And there's so many lessons to be learned from those paths and from those creators, and also new pathways to be made in this industry.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see some of the millennial and Gen X entrepreneurs in tourism spend 3 or 4 days with the legacy tour market and just see the kind of partnerships that evolve, the ideas that develop, the businesses that change hands, you know, in a great way. Like somebody's ready to transition out and somebody comes in and says, I'm going to pick this up and keep it going because I know how to do it and I'm going to even make it better. Like there's such an opportunity for people on both sides if we can figure out how to speak each other's language.
Yeah, where do you think we're at with that? I mean, we are essentially at the greatest transfer of generational wealth ever seen, at least in the United States, that is kind of happening under our noses. And there are all of these businesses out there. Where do they stand right now from your perspective and your experience? Are they prepared for this? Are they just going to fizzle if the, you know, if the person exits because they're exhausted?
Yeah, that's something that I'm watching with great concern, to be frank, is that a lot of them are fizzling. And it's not because COVID killed them. It's not because generational change killed them. It's nothing like that. It's that they were so siloed. So I meet tour operators on a regular basis who came from the legacy way of doing things, who have been in business 30 or 40 years. It's been great, but it's time for the next chapter in their life. But you know, their kids went to, you know, law school or they're engineers or, you know, Peace Corps or whatever. They're not going to pick up the business. And, you know, nobody who works in the central office can afford to buy them out. And so they're wondering what to do, and they're having hard conversations about, do I just close it down? And it's not like they can just sell to some entrepreneur in their hometown who's got capital but no experience. I mean, that's never going to work. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see a way for those young people who, you know, like you 15 years ago, had started a tour company, knew what it took. You know, maybe that company is working out, maybe it's not, but they've got the skills, they know how to do it. I'd love to find a way for them to connect with that business owner who's in their late 70s is like, you know what? I can't keep working this hard. I would feel heartbroken to just let it fizzle, but I don't know who to hand it to because there's nobody I trust. If we can build those trust platforms, I think we can solve those problems and keep some great organizations going that are doing great things in their communities. But we gotta cross-pollinate.
Well, I thank you for buzzing over to our beehive and pollinating us with your insights. Brian, it's been a joy to kind of hear your experience over the last decades. And also, I love everything that you said about being a force for good and change in what we do every single day as a group tour operators. So thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What can we do to get in touch with you? Do we need to find a newsie at the local kiosk to subscribe? or can we find you online now?
You can find us online, grouptravelleader.com. Some people ask, is that two L's next to each other? Yes, it's two L's. Grouptravelleader.com. All our content is there. Everything we do is free. I mean, every single thing we do is free. So if you are in the US and you're the kind of person that likes print magazines, we got print magazines and we'll send them to you free. So just go to the subscribe page on our site and sign up for that. If you don't want to see anything in print, we've got you. We've got e-newsletters. We're happy to sign you up for podcasts, all kinds of opportunities. We got familiarization trip opportunities. If you're an outbound tour operator looking for great new places to go, we facilitate those kinds of things. So we will load you up with as much information as you want. We're never going to ask you to pay us a dime. And we just are thrilled to be part of this new growing travel community.
Well, thank you, Brian. And thank you for undercutting Tourpreneur's price point. No, I mean, we believe in the same thing. Just the value that you bring to your community, I'm sure, is the same as ours, just in terms of generosity begets generosity. So, yeah. And a good sponsorship platform behind it. So, yeah. Brian, thank you. And as always, there'll be show notes and more information and links and everything else on tourpreneur.com if you are interested. And that's today's episode. If you need show notes from today's conversation, make sure you go to tourpreneur.com. And there you'll also find so much more, including our free course on Google, things to do leading to more direct bookings and more exposure on Google, available again at tourpreneur.com/Google.